Prepare yourselves. It's Big News Wednesday. Mainly just for one big thing. We've got a lot of other interesting news, not necessarily the biggest, most towering domestic news. The Democrats are asleep at the wheel as usual. Fully awake though, JR Jackson, host of The Watch List. How's it going, JR?
I don't know why you're assuming that, but sure, we'll go with that. I'm doing well. We're nearing the back end of this week. Mm-hmm. It's gonna be fun times.
Holidays next Wednesday, coming.
You're gonna have to look for someone else because I'm not gonna be here.
Noted.
Not sure to figure that out. That memo. It's a John Solo show next Wednesday.
Yeah. You not being here next Wednesday sounds like a problem I have to solve. But the issue is that I'm not going to be here next Wednesday, so I don't give a damn. I'm kidding. So I'm actually going to be gone for a few days. I'm going to be seeing my mom, who I haven't seen since before the pandemic.
Wow.
So good to be reminded of what she looks like. She did, after all, bring me into the world. So I'm going to be seeing her for a few days. And we're going to have awesome fill-in host Francesca Fiorentini, as well as Ben Glebe for the first time taking over the Damage Report, joined by awesome co-host. So it should be a lot of fun. Everyone stay tuned for that.
Absolutely.
Also, I feel like we're bearing the lead. I mean, it's great and all that you're on this show, but tomorrow, does everyone know what's going to happen? I'm going to be joining JR on The Watch List. They said it couldn't be done. His team said it shouldn't be done month after month after month, but they finally relented after many strongly worded letters, and I'm going to be allowed onto The Watch List.
This is your test run to see if you're going to be invited back.
I've done a couple shows, but I don't know, mixed reviews is how I'll put it. Anyway, it should be fun. Everyone definitely check out The Watch List tomorrow. For our show now, though, I'm going to need you to buckle up because the first little dribbles of information are coming out of Trump's taxes. They have been released into the wild and they're beginning to consume things to sustain themselves. We've got changes to the Electoral Count Act. It's the tiny paper thin shield that the Democrats are affording us against the next attempt to overturn the results of an election. We're going to talk about that. We got this really interesting story. So generally we think of the media as pretty cowardly in terms of their willingness to, you know, talk about what's actually going on from a lens that's not like directly to benefit their donors and owners and all of that. I've got a little twist on that. A story that was run in the Washington Post that is actually fascinating in what it reveals, but even more fascinating is the way that the newspaper tried to hide the entire point of the amazing thing that they were covering. So we're going to be talking about that in a little bit, and there's a lot more besides. Oh, by the way, in the full show, in the aftermath, we're going to be joined by a journalist who was banned by Elon Musk, who there was a bunch of journalists that were banned by him. There was this whole big stink, and then they were unbanned. This journalist was not up until just today. So we're going to dive into why she might have been banned. So get ready for that. In anticipation of that, please hit the like button, share the stream. And if you want to send us any comments, tweets, or super chats, you know how to do that. And you've got reasons to do it in the past, but starting today, I have been given the go ahead to start giving out Blue Apron gift cards of myself. So each show, one standout amazing comment, either that's super clever, adds some interesting context or history or just funny, from a member, I do have to say, on the different platforms, we're gonna give a $100 Blue Apron gift card. So a lot of fun. Everyone should take part in that. Anyway, with that said, JR, are you ready to start this show?
Only if I get my Blue Apron gift card.
You are not a member, as far as I know, on YouTube. Or maybe Twitch. We'll check. And full on members, obviously, too. Anyway, with that said, let's jump into it, starting with this.
There being 24 ayes and 16 noes, the motion to submit the committee report to the House is agreed to, and the documents are ordered reported to the House.
Okay, so admittedly, that wasn't a very exciting way to announce that something kind of exciting just happened. After many years now, the Democrats successfully got Trump's taxes. And in that little clip, what they mean is it's being released out into the wild. 6 years of former President Donald Trump's tax returns, his personal tax returns, stuff having to do with his business as well, is out there. Not all of it just yet, but some. And already from what's been revealed, there is some fascinating stuff. Another thing that's fascinating about this, though, was all of the assurances that were given that this would never happen, that we would never get to where we're at today Here's an example of that. This is Mick Mulvaney back in April of, I believe, 2019. Here's what he had to say.
Reason, so they know they're
not. To be clear, you believe Democrats will never see the president's tax returns?
Oh, no, never. Nor should they. Keep in mind that that's an issue that was already litigated during the election. Voters knew the president could have given his tax returns. They knew that he didn't, and they elected him anyway, which, of course, is what drives the Democrats crazy. But they know they're not going to get this. They just want the attention on the issue because they don't want to talk to us about policy.
Yes, as we all know, the Democrats are the ones who've been driven crazy by the results of elections in recent years. Anyway, what a corrupt, weaselly way to approach a legitimate, weird thing a candidate was doing. Well, if they win anyway, then ipso facto, every voter loves that thing about them. It clearly isn't anything that should be talked about because he technically won the Electoral College. He didn't even get the majority of the voters to actually support it. And by the way, let's be clear. 2 out of 3 Americans wanted to see Trump's tax returns. That includes a significant number of Trump voters, of Republicans, of conservatives, of MAGA people. Even MAGA people find it really weird that he won't show that. And why wouldn't they? I mean, granted, in terms of policy, the faux populism of Donald Trump in the MAGA world never amounted to anything. But his campaign was predicated on draining the swamp, getting rid of the corruption. And you say you're gonna do that, and yet you're hiding, desperately fighting to hide your tax information in a way that every other politician, every other president, every presidential candidate has willingly presented, been far more transparent than you. It's no surprise that MAGA people wanted to see it as well. So we're gonna get into reactions to this as well as what has already come out. But JR, what do you think about the fact that it is now starting to be released?
That was just with the Mick Mulvaney part first. That was funny back then when he said they want to talk about this and they don't want to talk to us about policy. Throughout that dude's entire presidency, people talked about his policies. They talked about how bad his policies were. They talked about how those policies affect Americans negatively. They talked about how those policies waste money. They talked about how those policies create hate, division, and violence. All that stuff was talked about. We talked about your policies. And you guys called it Trump derangement syndrome. When people talk about his taxes, because knowing the information about his taxes might lead us to understand how he may interact with world leaders, the decisions he might make based off of his own self-worth or maybe skirting some of those responsibilities. All that stuff is supposed to be determined from seeing his taxes. So yes, yeah, he was still elected president after people didn't see it. But does that mean they didn't want to see it? Or is it that they voted for the hate? Because it sounds like more like it, by the way. And also, if you're a Trump sycophant and you love him, shouldn't you want to see this glorious, illustrious returns? See how fabulously wealthy he is? How all of his assets and all of his money came from such reputable places and he hasn't done anything nefarious at all? Shouldn't you want to see how fabulous your king is? Yeah. But
shouldn't
they won't
you
tell anybody?
Yeah, 100%. Oh, by the way, hey, let's play a funny game with the new precedent that has been put forward. The Republicans are saying that they're gonna spend the next couple of years investigating whatever it is that Hunter Biden did or something with Joe Biden. Well, Joe Biden won the election. But everybody knew that there were concerns about Hunter Biden. We've known that for literally years. It's already been litigated. And he actually won the popular vote. So it's been more litigated than that. And no, I don't actually mean this. I don't, if Joe Biden has committed any crimes, they should be investigated. The supposed precedent that Mulvaney is trying to set there, he does not in any way believe. And there's another wrinkle to it that we're gonna get to in just a little bit. But let's talk about reactions to this. Trump taxes being released in the wild has been interpreted very differently depending on who you talk to. So people like Representative Bill Pascrell, who chairs the House Ways and Means Committee, a subcommittee on oversight, said that the planned release was a triumph for the idea that no one person is above the law. I like that. And in theory, I sort of agree philosophically, but if you really want to demonstrate that he's not above the law, have the law actually apply to him. This is disclosure. I think that's good. Disclosure, he's not above disclosure, but he's not in jail for the crimes he's committed. So let's not get ahead of ourselves. Went on to say, for six long years, we fought to release these documents because Americans deserve to know if their chief executive is compromised. He said he categorically rejects the GOP backlash, accusing them of hypocrisy. Congress is the Article I branch. Our power to oversee the executive is broad. That power was illegally stymied by Trump and his adjutants for literally years. A spokesman for the Trump campaign put out a statement. They obviously are not happy about this. If they are so hell-bent on releasing President Trump's tax returns, which show he built a very successful business and created numerous lucrative assets throughout his career, they should release the tax returns of Nancy Pelosi. Well, again, I would just stop on that first point. If that's all that the Trump tax is gonna show, that he was a hell of a businessman, why was Donald Trump fighting to the death to not have them released? But fine, we'll move on to the Nancy Pelosi thing. Yeah, release your taxes. What game do you think you're playing, Republicans? I love when they're so biased towards their side that they think that the other side is equally biased in the opposite direction. No, I don't want corruption amongst any of our politicians. Release his taxes. Release Bernie's taxes. Release Ilhan Omar's taxes. Release all of them. They are public servants. If they're getting rich off of us, if they're breaking the law, if they're skirting the law, if they're using insider information, I want us to know that regardless of the letter that comes before their name. And by the way, I will prove that by pointing out how infuriating it is that the Democrats ran out the clock on a congressional stock ban bill. Remember, we talked about that for a solid year and a half, clip after clip after clip. Nancy Pelosi got what she wanted. She was never actually behind that. She was very clear in the beginning that she wasn't for a ban on individual stock trading. She wants them to continue to be able to use the insider information they have to get themselves personally rich. She eventually relented and, oh, gee whiz, they weren't able to get it done. I'm sure the Republicans will take it up since they're so against corruption. They so want to stop the elites and drain the swamp, JR.
This is the normal approach, and I've always said it too. When they were saying, you know, we have to investigate Hillary, let's investigate Biden, let's investigate Obama. I said, none of those folks are related to me. So I'm not sure why you think I'm concerned with whatever investigations you think you have to do in order to come up with some real life information that actually affects folks. Cool, go for it, go after them. But the purpose, obviously, and with Kevin McCarthy trying to get the speakership, floating all these investigations and everything they want to do, it's for the position. It's for the power. It's absolutely not do anything else. These are the same folks who are in Congress that say, you know how badly Congress is run? Did you know that Congress is the least trusted entity in all of America by American voters? Yeah, bro, you're in it. You're one of those 100%. People. It's so weird when they say that stuff. But it's the idea to finally get people's information and determine who they are and how they just might lead. Suddenly, that's like a radical idea. It's how far we've shifted from trusting certain politicians and not all of them.
Yeah. You know what? Let's double down on this because I want to give you another Republican who's trying to appeal to regular people with this sort of, again, this is like pro like keeping the elites in the shadows terminology. Here's Kevin Brady. Let's jump into this.
Going forward, the majority chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee and the Senate Finance Committee will have nearly unlimited power to target and make public the tax returns of private citizens. And not just private citizens, political enemies, business and labor leaders, or even the returns of Supreme Court justices themselves.
No, anything but that. No, not the justices, not these angelic beings who are beyond any suspicion, let alone oversight. Don't let their taxes be released. I want to ask if he doesn't know, but I'm sure he knows that there are significant remaining questions about some of the funding that went to Brett Kavanaugh before he became a justice. I would love some disclosure of how they're making money. They wield incredible, effectively unrestrained power for decades. I think we should know everything about their financial history before they get in office. I would say it's probably even more important than it is for the president, considering how long their term can last. And honestly, I think most conservatives would agree with that. This is a really, I understand why they have to push for this. Kevin Brady doesn't want his taxes to be revealed. He doesn't want any of his colleagues in the House's taxes to be revealed because they know what they do. They know how they're getting rich. But I don't think that this plays for regular people. Obviously, Democrats aren't gonna like it right now, although not nearly enough, you know, big D Democrats are mad at Nancy Pelosi for what she's done recently. But I don't think conservatives like this either, JR.
They shouldn't. But it's that same line, by the way. And this is how they maybe get these conservatives that may want these types of principles to be carried out, is as Kevin Brady there that said, they're coming for you next. It's the same thing Trump says. It's the same thing any of the other conservatives say. Once one thing happens for these, the top most powerful people within the party being held account, held to account for their actions in their past, then they start saying, hey, you, Joe Williams in Oklahoma, they're coming for you next. Should you now say you should shield Trump from everything? What do the two have to do with each other? And by the way, they've already come for Joe Williams and Nancy, you know, Smith over and over and over again. Regular folks always get hemmed up by the authorities, IRS, taxes. If something's off, it's something a little bit different. Hey, you owe us another $1,800. All this stuff happens to regular folks all the time. So I'm not sure why this argument still floats with people who are like, yeah, we want to see what he's been up to. He's the one who's wielding power. He's the one who led you guys into giving tax cuts for certain folks to the tune of billions of dollars. So yeah, sure, good job. But I'm not sure how this keeps convincing people that they're just like Donald Trump. They're coming for you now and your millions. Sure.
I know. Like, they love to. I have thoughts. Let's play the second clip of Kevin Brady.
No party in Congress should have that power. No individuals in Congress should have that power. It's the power to embarrass, to harass, or destroy Americans through disclosure of their tax returns.
Oh, dear God, let's not embarrass people who want to have magnificent power over all areas of public life. Let's not do that. Harassing them, I could see it potentially being used. I think that that's an interesting, you know, albeit slippery slope argument you're making there. Maybe we could get to that point. We could talk about that. To destroy them, though, your tax is being released. If your tax is being released can destroy you, that's a you problem, not a me problem, I think, at that point. What the hell are you hiding in there? You're gonna look at what's on my hard drive? That could destroy me. Then I should not have that stuff on my hard drive, I think, personally, is how I would. I think you're telling on yourself there, Kevin Brady. But bear in mind, by the way, the last time in the research that I did, that I can find, of the same statute that's being used by the Dems to release his taxes right now was used, was back in 2014. And this is during the made-up scandal over the IRS supposedly being biased against Tea Party groups. It wasn't true. They were doing the same sort of scrutiny to progressive groups, groups affiliated with Occupy Wall Street. The Republicans will never admit that, but it's 100% true. They used that statute to release information about the groups that were applying for tax exempt status. Was that harassing? Was that embarrassing? Was that destroying? Because the Republicans were happy to do it at that point. I think they're public servants, honestly. The idea that if you want to have not only great benefits and guaranteed pay and all of these perks and then setting yourself up to be wealthy for the rest of your life by becoming a congressman or a senator, the idea that, well, we couldn't possibly constrain you in any way, there shouldn't be any cost to that. Why? Why? For all of the things, I want people who run for office, who want to become a congressperson, a senator, the president, I don't want them to do it because they know it's the best. And it comes with all these amazing perks and everything. They should be willing to do it to deliver for people. I think disclosure of taxes is the bare minimum of the extra ties that we should put on them. They should be well regulated. They get away with murder.
They call Washington D.C. the swamp, but then they want to protect people that thrive in the swamp. Weird how that
exactly
works.
Yeah, it's one thing when they're campaigning. They talk vaguely in a general sense about the establishment. But what do you actually want to do? Like, they get nothing, because it's all just a tactic. It's a way to get the rubes on your side. That's it. Now that some of Trump's taxes have been released, the very beginnings of it at least, what have we learned? Well, look, I am still a little bit pessimistic about the ability of anything in these taxes to really sway a lot of people. That said, the initial stuff is kind of interesting. So the first bit has to do with audits. You'll recall Trump couldn't release his taxes year after year after year after year because he was under audit. Bear that in mind as we go forward, because it turns out that the IRS failed to audit Donald Trump during his first 2 years in office, despite a program that makes the auditing of sitting presidents mandatory. Okay, that was revealed when they released these taxes. Mr. Trump filed returns in 2017 for the two previous tax years, but the IRS began auditing those filings only in 2019. He'd already been president for years at that point. The first time they did it was on the same day in April the Ways and Means Committee requested access to his taxes and any associated audits, which is a little bit transparent. Okay, I guess we'll do it. They're literally right now live on C-SPAN requesting that we do this. I guess we should cover our asses. Oh, very convincing, the cover up that you're doing there. The IRS, by the way, hasn't even completed those audits yet because it was started so recently. And the agency started auditing his filings covering his income while president only after he wasn't president anymore. So not only was his excuse for why he didn't have to release his taxes absolute BS, but there was an extraordinary circumstance that led to that. They're mandated to do that auditing. It's one of the few corruption oversight measures, and they weren't doing it. Now, was that just an oversight, or was there pressure? Were they advised not to look into him until they absolutely had to? I have no idea. Maybe this could lead to a pretty interesting investigation. But Jared, what do you think?
They're getting there, maybe. I don't know. But I, honestly, at the end of this whole thing, you will get more information. We're seeing what they did and did not do, mostly. But then what's that going to lead to? Again, back to Brady talking about how we're coming after private citizens. Well, damn, of course. If they're going to start finally looking into things after he's out of office, now he's a private citizen, but he's still a former president. He's still leading the party in a decent amount, I guess a small certain percentage of the fact he's still leading this party and still declaring he's going to run for president, still has support from people that are elected officials. So, hey, this isn't just some random nobody private citizen, but it's definitely a way to try and continue to push away from this, because who knows what's in the next guy's taxes? Who knows what's in the next guy's background that they don't want you to know? This is a precedent they're trying to set, definitely.
Yeah, 100%. No, that is a great point too, because it isn't just about Trump. I mean, it could be just about Trump. He's definitely hiding tons of crimes. But if he were to get through all of this and they never were released, then 100%, why would any Republican candidate ever release his taxes? Like, maybe one would do it like as a preemptive measure to show that they're clean, but they'd be doing that because others would be refusing to. So yes, I think this is an important, we have to make it clear that if you're gonna run for president, if you're gonna try to get all that power, we get to dig into your past and know, you know, not only if you're compromised, but a ton of other, you know, potentially worrying things. Now, one other thing that came out in some of the early stuff about his taxes was the amount of tax that he paid, oddly enough. When combined with tax records previously obtained by the New York Times, the records show that in 2018, Mr. Trump had positive taxable income for the first time in more than a decade. He had just been going through such hard times up until then. I mean, he was driving a used car. He was barely getting by, eating Easy Mac every night. The dude just couldn't scrape together a couple of bucks. So why did he finally have positive taxable income? Well, that change occurred largely because he had sold properties or investments at a gain of $22 million. And he appears to have exhausted the business losses he had been rolling over year after year. As a result, he paid just shy of $1 million in federal income taxes for 2018. Again, bear in mind, this is a guy who says he is a multi-billionaire. $1 million in taxes sounds like a lot for you, for me, for JR. That's a lot of money. For a guy who has thousands of millions of dollars, that is suspiciously low. And that's the one time he paid taxes. His long-term, by the way, that was it. That was a brief little moment. Then his long-term pattern of reporting negative income returned by 2020, and he paid no federal income taxes for that year. What happened last year, God only knows, but if I had to put any money on it, it's that he didn't give us any of his money. That's what I would guess. JR, what are your thoughts?
Not only didn't contribute, but also took more, of course. And again, as the process went, as soon as he got in the office, he and his Republican cohorts made sure that that continued for more rich folks, that they got more tax breaks. This is how this whole thing works. He said it openly as he was running. Let's not forget all the back and forth about his taxes as he was running, that people were criticizing people for looking for those. He openly said it. Why would I be dumb enough to show you guys things? Why would I be dumb enough to pay taxes? I'm Donald effing Trump. Why would I pay taxes? I have the ability not to. Would you pay taxes if you didn't have to? If you're given special treatment, if you're allowed to skirt rules and no one ever investigates you, are you stupid? He damn near said that same thing.
Yeah, 100%. And look, some Republicans actually like that. I don't accept it. I don't think that that's okay. I know that I wouldn't get away with it. I love the idea, by the way, that if your business is a failure, which I love that's the argument that he's been making for years and years and years to the IRS. My business sucks so bad and just keeps losing money constantly that I should never have to pay taxes. Well, look, I've occasionally thought about opening up a board game cafe or something. And based on that as the premise and me as an owner, it's definitely gonna lose money every year. I better start that soon because I'm actually paying federal taxes and I would very much like to stop. So come to my board game cafe, you'll be alone and I will be taxless for the first time in my life. Anyway, with that said, we're gonna move to our first break. We come back though. Look, a lot of us are worried about another insurrection. We've got a minor change to the law to make it a little bit less likely. We'll reveal that to you after this. Okay, so I see a comment on Twitch about the Food for Thought trivia. I believe that last Friday was the last round of that, but we're still doing these comments. So it's a slightly different way that we're gonna be getting these gift cards to people. Also, heads up, we got the regrettable news that unfortunately, Lynette Lopez is not gonna be able to join us. Is the journalist that was banned by Elon Musk. He actually reached out and banned her from appearing on the show. So unfortunately, she can't, I'm kidding. She's not gonna be able to join us, but we're definitely gonna talk to her in the near future. With that said, let's jump back into Congress doing something technically with this story. Donald Trump tried many different ways to overturn the results of the 2020 election. And I think it's justifiable to be worried that he or another Republican could make the same sorts of efforts in the future. Now, the Democrats were supposed to pass a massive bill to protect our elections, make it easier to vote, all of that. They failed to do that, unfortunately. But as a consolation prize, as what might be their last action before Congress recesses and the Republicans take over, they have passed a change to the Electoral Count Act. And I wanna tell you about that. So this bill that was just approved would amend the 19th century law that governs, along with the actual Constitution, how states and Congress certify electors and declare presidential election winners, ensuring that the popular vote from each state is protected from manipulation and that Congress doesn't arbitrarily decide presidential elections when it meets to count the votes every 4 years. Senate Rules Committee Chairwoman Amy Klobuchar says, we are now one step closer to protecting our democracy and preventing another January 6th. Yes, it is technically one step closer, but there's a whole lot of other steps that we could have taken that we didn't. I'm not saying it's up to her, but it's frustrating. Anyway, here are the changes that are being made. The bill clarifies, remember that for later, that the vice president has a purely ceremonial role presiding over the certification every January 6th after a presidential election, and that he or she has no power to determine the results of the election. Okay, Donald Trump, are you listening? No power, it's ceremonial. Herschel Walker, like your badge, it's ceremonial. It isn't real. Anyway, Pence resisted Donald Trump's attempts to get him to overturn the results of the election, but many lawmakers were concerned that the law wasn't definitive enough. The legislation states that the vice president shall have no power to solely determine, accept, reject, or otherwise adjudicate or resolve disputes over the counting of electors in Congress. So, to be clear, it already did that. They're passing an extra piece of legislation to just make sure that everyone understands that it is purely ceremony. JR, what do you think?
This is what Donald Trump was complaining about. One of the 727 things that Donald Trump was complaining about when it came to him losing the election. Well, now look at Congress. Look at those Democrats trying to change the rules so that I can't pull this alternative slate of electors, so that I can't determine myself being the winner based off of what I can interpret as the rules. So they're definitely clarifying how this works. Can you believe they're trying to change the rules, is what he called it. Change the rules so I can no longer try to subvert elections falsely. That's basically what he's been saying, and now that they're finally doing it, I'm sure he's on Truth Social talking about how, look at what they're doing, making sure I can no longer try to cheat.
Oh, he is.
Any longer. Of course he is.
We'll get to it. We're gonna talk about it. That wasn't the only thing that it did though. So it also would make it more difficult for lawmakers to object to a particular state's electoral vote. So bear in mind, they were trying to get Mike Pence to single-handedly overturn the election, but they were also in the House and the Senate trying to challenge it as well. Under current law, just one member of the Senate and one member of the House need to lodge an objection to automatically trigger votes in both chambers on whether to overturn or discard a particular state's presidential election results. This bill would significantly raise that threshold, requiring a fifth of each chamber to object before votes would be held. So that is 20 times higher in the Senate at the very least. But it still allows one party, if they want to, a vast minority of one party to do it. So it is raised. It's not foolproof necessarily. And by the way, raising the threshold for objections will do away with a partisan tradition that has rankled members on both sides. Democrats have objected the last three times that Republicans were elected, twice against George W. Bush, once against Trump. But in each of those cases, the Democratic candidate had already conceded, and Trump to this day falsely claims he defeated Biden. So again, I know, you know, Sean Hannity will say that it's all the same. Everybody objects. No, like a couple of random people doing it when nobody is actually trying to change the results of the election is not the same thing as a guy who inspired an insurrection that literally left people dead in the streets. I shouldn't need to explain that, but that's the case. So they've also changed that, JR.
Yeah, this is the other thing. Yeah, people challenge all the time. They talk about this whenever it comes to Democrats that have pushed back or said, hey, well, let's get a count here. Let's get clarification. Let's find out these things that I'm concerned with that potentially happened during this election. Let's get it adjudicated. After it gets all figured out, then they move on. Mm-hmm. It is 2020, damn near 2023. Has Donald Trump done that yet? I need no more of these comparisons to anyone else in the political sphere that talks about challenging elections or asking for clarifications or even legal challenges to the results. Because after it gets done, they shut the F up. Guess who hasn't done that? It's just two different things.
100%. Here's one other thing before we move on to Trump's reaction. The bill would ensure that there's only one slate of electors. That sounds good. They were trying to do their fake slates, but I still have concerns. I'll tell you why. This is a response to the unsuccessful efforts to create alternate fake slates of electors. So they say each state's governor would be required to submit the electors, which are sent under a formal process to Congress and opened at the rostrum during the joint session. That sounds good. Wait, the governor sends it. Which governor? Well, whichever the governor happens to be. The governor could be Carrie Lake. The governor could be an absolute madman. So I guess maybe this helps a little bit, so long as at the state level they don't change the results of an election. So, you know, like stick a pin in that. Maybe we'll return to it in 2024 because they're definitely going to try to do that. So that's all of the changes. And now let's be fair and balanced here and allow Trump to respond. The Electoral Count Act being amended is largely a formality. It's mostly going to exist in the same way. But even that clarification was enough to trigger Donald Trump, who bleated, I don't care whether they change the Electoral Count Act or not. Probably better to leave it the way it is so that it can be adjusted in case of capital F fraud. But what I don't like are the lies and disinformation put out by the Democrats and rhinos. They said the vice president has absolutely no choice. It was carved in steel. That's not an expression. But if he has no choice, why are they changing the law saying he has no choice? Oh, damn, he caught us. Because your head is so dense, you couldn't understand what the word ceremonial means. You forced us to do what shouldn't need to be done. But you can't deny it at this point, right? Right, Donald Trump? You accept that he can't overturn it again? And by the way, I will say what we've said literally every time. I have a question for you. Can Kamala Harris overturn the results of the next election? You definitely don't think that she can. So it's clear that you don't actually believe the vice president can do that. Because if not, then I can really relax for the next couple of years because it looks like a Democrat's probably going to win the presidency, but no Republican actually believes that. Darren, what do you think?
Yeah, he continues to keep proving how he doesn't understand how any of this works, or at least he'd like for people to think he doesn't understand how this works, because if you understand it, then you can't continue to complain about it over and over and over again. Why they changed law? He must have had a choice. And again, this is still attacking Mike Pence. Just keep it real. That's like second version of this is, hey, this guy still could have done it. Don't forget that. The same guy they said kill Mike Pence, and he's like, well, maybe he should have done the right thing. You know, again, I'm looking for his end game. What is the end game here? Does he really think suddenly one day, because of all this bitching and complaining on Truth Social, it's suddenly the entire government system and the entire American electoral system is going to go Trump Truth Social about it?
Yeah,
that's right. He's right. Yeah. Let's change this entire thing. Come on, bro.
There's one other thing I want to mention, just because he's trying to say that he supports someone, but he kind of threw them under the bus. So he goes on to bleat. In other words, John Eastman and others were correct in stating that the vice president of the United States had the right to do what should have been done. The only reason this change is being promulgated. Okay, who taught him promulgated? Because he definitely didn't know promulgated 2 days ago. Anyway, is to reform the Electoral Count Act so that the VP cannot do what they powerfully said he couldn't do, but it couldn't be done. Why are they making this law change? Don't use powerfully like that. It's very weird. Also, adverbs weaken your prose rather than strengthening it. It's a common, it's a super basic lesson. Anyway, John Eastman is also being referred for criminal investigation. Why are you just reminding everyone that no, John Eastman was, he had my back. He was like, I know you lost, but we're gonna find a way, Tony. Don't worry. Whatever it takes. Leave John Eastman alone. He's already gonna be going through a lot in the near future.
He continues to think unlimited power is the way to go. Mike Pence had the ability to literally change this whole thing. That's what he just thinks. He said before, presidents have this level of, he thinks, unlimited power to do whatever the hell they want. Only when it's him, though, because I guarantee he doesn't think that currently.
Yeah, 100%. Again, they would never allow Kamala Harris to do this. Anyway, with that said, I want to move to, can you all indulge me for a moment? I know this is going to be weird. This is the normal sort of thing you do on a show like this, but just bear with me for a second as we jump into this C block. I'm usually pretty critical of the media for what I see is as cowardice in not fulfilling the obligation that they have in this very important role as a part of democracy and making sure that people understand what is actually going on. Sometimes though, they can let us know what's going on and still be cowards. And so, look, I don't know who's to blame for this. I'm certainly not saying it's the author. I think it's far more likely it's an editor or a manager at Washington Post. So don't message the author. I'm sure it's not them, but there was this article and it actually contained fascinating information, okay? This is from the Washington Post. They say this October report, so they're looking into these different scientific studies of the effect of different policies on health outcomes. And they say the October report found that if all states implemented liberal policies on the environment, gun safety, criminal justice, health and welfare, labor, marijuana, and economic and tobacco taxes, more than 170,000 lives would have been saved back in 2019. On the flip side, if states went with conservative versions of those policies, there would have been about 217,000 more deaths that year, the equivalent of a 600 passenger airplane crashing every day of the year. That is mind blowing. The horror of the difference between these two slates of policies. And by the way, it's not all in the favor of the liberals. They say the largest projected number of lives saved, about 201,000 in a year, came from a more mixed menu of ideologies incorporating conservative marijuana policies. Because this is going to be a shocker to people, but smoking marijuana can cause some health problems in the same way that smoking tobacco can. I don't think anybody disagrees with that. But anyway, here's the thing. That is fascinating. They've just revealed that hundreds of thousands of lives a year might be on the line going for conservative policies versus liberal policies. So why am I mad? Well, how do they present this to the public who isn't necessarily gonna read the entire article? This is how they present it. Can politics kill you? Research says the answer increasingly is yes. Well, that's not technically wrong, but that's kind of hiding the point. Politics isn't killing you. Certain politics is killing you. What parties aren't killing you? One party appears to have a good chance of killing you. By the way, it gets super clear. They say on COVID, in one study, researchers concluded that people living in more conservative parts of the United States disproportionately bore the burden of illness and death linked to COVID-19. The other, which looked at health outcomes more broadly, found that the more conservative a state's policies, the shorter the lives of working age people. So not only do more people die, but they die at a younger age. This is super clear, multiple studies across multiple different issue areas. And yet, you have to dig into the article to read what I just read for you. Do you want to know what you get in the first paragraph? As the coronavirus pandemic approaches its third full winter, two studies reveal an uncomfortable truth. The toxicity of partisan politics is fueling an overall increase in mortality rates for working age Americans. Again, that isn't technically inaccurate, but it hides the entire point of what you're talking about. Toxicity isn't killing people. Partisanship, extremism, these vague things that allow the Washington Post to distance themselves from what the studies are showing. That isn't what is killing people. Conservative politics, conservative politicians are killing people. When you say the division in American politics has grown increasingly caustic and polarized, but it wasn't always this way, how has it changed? Specifically, in what way? They're giving us the actual information, but hiding what the takeaway should be from it, JR. So I apologize for going off on that. It's just they finally did a good thing. Why not actually promote it? Say what it is.
Because then conservatives, politicians as well, conservative politicians will say, look at the Washington Post with their slanted partisan article. Sometimes the truth is slanted and partisan. It doesn't mean that they're coming up with different realities. We've always said it. It's weird how, not we being the Young Turks or anybody, but it's obvious. I forget who originated it, but it's weird how reality and logic actually have a liberal bias, because that's where the reality is. When people make stuff up from the other side to get their political points across, those things just aren't real. And by the way, this whole mix of different things, the one part of marijuana policy being conservative, if that's mixed in, how many more lives would be saved? What's that based on? I don't know what studies they went through to get to that point, or whatever kind of processes they went to get to that 201,000 number. But what is conservative policies towards marijuana in general? I'm sure it varies between different politicians, but in general, it's punitive, absolutely illegal. If you're caught with it, you're going to jail, because they think that that keeps people from participating in it. Has that worked yet? By the way, if we do make it absolutely illegal and then people still do it, those health problems still happen that could come from marijuana use. You know what could help that? Some of those other policies, like healthcare, access to it, where it's not a brick wall. If you don't have the right kinds of funds for it, then that could actually save some of those lives that are negatively affected by the effects of smoking marijuana. But absolute punitive approach to this has never worked. That's why we keep doing it, fighting it over and over and over again. If you have a solution to a problem and it still is the problem, that solution that you've been working on might not be the right solution, but we'll still push it and we'll still say, hey, those conservative policies just might help. Why? In what reality? Not the real one we're living in, some other one that we made up.
I like your approach, JR, and I think we should definitely, you're diving into the actual way that things are being coded in the study. I like that. We should do that. I think the article could do more of that. But at the end of the day, that's not on the author of this article at the very least.
True.
They're presenting it, but I agree. If science is of any value, it's in helping to guide action based on the best available information. This should be one of the biggest stories of the year. This politics, two different ideologies or whatever, although in practice sometimes there isn't that much difference between them, producing vastly different outcomes for the people who are going to be ruled by them. But we treat it as a horse race. We treat it as a thing of personalities. That's what it's about. It's about people living or dying early, lives being cut short, suffering. Make it clear. Anyway, I have gone way over, much apologies. We're going to take our second break. When we come back, we've got a scam affecting apparently young boys in America. It is devastating, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. James says Trevor Noah does a good one too. Yes, he does. He's unfortunately out of the Daily Show. Who do we think's gonna take over? Okay, my dark horse candidate, Cecily Strong. Left SNL. I think she could do a good job.
Oh, she did just leave SNL, huh?
She did suspiciously timed when Trevor Noah left.
All I'm saying is I'm rooting for a Mr. Ben Glebe. He posted he's angling for it. And I might be able to appear on the show if we have to have an end.
That's true.
Why not?
That is true. Although I do have to say, as much as I love Ben, I've known Francesca for far longer, and I know that she's been angling for it. So I might have to give her the seniority nod there. Both of them would be great. And by the way, if either of them took over, then they could bring the other on as a correspondent, and also us. That would be nice. Anyway, so there's a lot of great people that I would love to see on there. Okay, with that said, here's something we don't love to see. The FBI announced earlier this week what appears to be an evolution of a scam that is targeting teenage boys, where the boys are being extorted for money in exchange for not releasing nude photos that the kids have been convinced to give out. It's horrendous. It's even worse than you might think, as we'll describe. At least 3,000 children have already been victims of these schemes just this year. Okay, mostly teenage boys, although not exclusively. And it is believed that up to a dozen suicides have been linked to this particular scam. Here's how it works. Many think that they're chatting online with kids around their own age, but are quickly manipulated into sending explicit pictures and then blackmailed for money with threats to release the images. Most victims are between 14 and 17, but kids as young as 10 have been targeted. Many of the current wave of schemes are believed to be originating with scammers based in West African countries like Nigeria and the Ivory Coast. The suspects typically pose as kids of similar age, often using a girl's profile picture and even listing schools or adding friends to make it look like they live in the same area. This can happen on Instagram or Facebook or even in gaming and video chats, like literally in a game, somebody could pursue you for this. The director of the FBI, Christopher Wray, says victims may feel like there's no way out. It's up to all of us to reassure them that they are not in trouble, there is hope, and they're not alone. So let's talk about a particular instance of this. Someone has been arrested for doing this, Jonathan Cassie. You can see here a photo of the individual, 25-year-old, who had been posting under Emily Smith and Cassie Jonathan, like changing the name around to snare people. According to authorities in this case, Cassie sent Ryan Lass, the victim, a romantic picture of a young female and asked for one of him in return. Immediately after Ryan shared an intimate photo of his own, the criminal demanded $5,000, threatening to send the photo to his friends and family and make it public. Hours later, Ryan took his own life. Absolutely devastating. And that is one case out of at least 3,000 that have been identified, let alone all of the others out there who were like so embarrassed or ashamed about it that they didn't reach out to law enforcement. And that's just one year in just one country. Who knows how wide this is? Now, JR, I know you have kids. I don't know if you think at all about these sorts of scams or how you get your kid prepared for it or whatever, but I can't even imagine trying to navigate all this as a young person.
It's still early for us. Kids 11, so I mean, I don't think so. But you know, it's one of those things where as it approaches and as it comes to that age and his interactions, each kid is different, obviously. And knowing what your kid's about and their interests and all that stuff to a degree as much as you can, because we know kids don't say everything. This is the scary part. This is what I assume every parent is afraid of as their kid reaches age. And how, honestly, interacting with people is so much different because there's no direct relation to it. Like back in the day, you know, my father could talk to me about stuff and it's somewhat still the same way. They still met people in person, you know, even more so than even the way I did when I was a teenager, or you know, the use of phones was different, even though it was still just house phones. There's always a different change. But in this particular case, how people find a way to warn their kids to see it happening before it goes down. And look, it took hours in this particular case from the moment of the threat to the moment of when he decided to take his own life. Where do you find that moment to be like, yo, we need to have this conversation? Then if that's not anywhere on their radar, that's an embarrassing conversation. So it's hard all the way around. You know, if you come to your kid and be like, hey, if you're sending your penis around on the internet, they can be like, whoa, where'd you get this from? And you kind of, it chills that conversation and you don't want to have it anymore if you're wrong about it or if they don't want to talk to you about it. It's really, really hard to find a way to get into this before it gets bad.
Yeah. It's just devastating. I know, I don't know if anybody else remembers this, but it reminds me of an episode of Black Mirror. It wasn't exactly the same situation. They didn't just ask for money, but I honestly even wonder if maybe that episode might have inspired some people to do this sort of thing. Look, obviously we need to do whatever we can to make sure that people know they're educated about the presence of these sorts of scams. And by the way, there are so many, some that operate on the phone, some that operate online. We need to educate people about them, but also try to remove some of the stigma and shame around so many of these things. People being terrified at the consequences of things being revealed, that isn't necessary. Like and I understand that there are, you know, powerful cultural forces that want people to be ashamed of all sorts of things about who they are. We're trying to fight back against that. This would be one of maybe the extra perks of that, is that people wouldn't feel like their life is gonna be absolutely over if a nude photo of them comes out, or if some fact about their sexuality or their identity comes out. We can try to reassure people that their life isn't necessarily over just because a bit of info might be revealed. So just devastating. We need to make sure that people know about this to avoid these tragic outcomes.
Very good point about sexuality too, because that gets used against people all the time.
100%. That is unfortunate all the time we have for the first hour of the show, but there is a lot more news to come. We're gonna be breaking down some of the words that we're apparently not supposed to use anymore. We get into a fun conversation, then Josh Hawley has a new way to own the libs. It's pretty embarrassing. Be right back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.